The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, 7th Chapter, 13th Verse, recorded on June 8, 1997 at Chicago.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this regard that when a president or king is sitting on his throne, he does not need to show respect to everyone who comes within his assembly. But he must show respect to superiors like his spiritual master, Rama and Vaishnava. There are many examples of how he should act. When Lord Krishna was sitting on his throne and Narada fortunately entered his assembly, even Lord Krishna immediately stood up with his officers and ministers to offer respectful obeisances to Narada. Narada knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna knew that Narada was his devotee. But although Krishna is the Supreme Lord and Narada is the Lord's devotee, the Lord observed the religious etiquette. Since Narada was a brahmachari, a brahman, and an exalted devotee, even Krishna, while acting as a king, offered his respectful obeisances unto Narada. Such is the conduct visible in the Vedic civilization. civilization in which the people do not know how the representative of Narada and Krishna should be respected, how society should be formed, and how one should advance in Krishna consciousness, a society concerned only with manufacturing new cars and new skyscrapers every year and then breaking them to pieces and making new ones, may be technologically advanced, but it is not a human civilization. A human civilization is advanced when its people follow the Chaturvarna system, the system of four orders of life. There must be ideal first-class men to act as advisors, second-class men to act as administrators, third-class men to produce food and protect cows, and fourth-class men who obey the three higher classes of society. One who does not follow the standard system of society should be considered a fifth-class man. A society without Vedic laws and regulations will not be very helpful to humanity. As stated in this verse, dharmam te na param vidhu, such a society does not know the aim of life, and the highest principle of religion.
In fact, sometimes he would take the dust from their feet
put it on his own head. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worships the Vaishnavas. Krishna worships his own devotees. And the devotees worship Krishna. And this is the transcendental experience of the spiritual world, where Krishna's only business is to give pleasure to his devotees, and the devotees' only business is to give pleasure to Krishna. And this is the abode of pure love, selfless love. Krishna says in Gita, yena tamam prapadyante tam tathaya. As you approach me, I reward you accordingly. To the degree we make Krishna the object of our life's desires, the goal of all of our activities, samsavir paritosha, to please Krishna, to that degree Krishna will reveal himself to us. This is the path of bhakti. It is the most powerful of all spiritual paths, because bhakti conquers God. God is the supreme controller of all controllers. Not a blade of grass can move without his sanction. At his mere exhalation, all the cosmic manifestation comes into being. And in his inhalation, everything within creation is destroyed. This is the power of Krishna. Everyone and everything within this world is being controlled by the three modes of material nature. So Krishna says that he is the controller of these three modes. Therefore, everything is under the power of God. Krishna is Vibhu. He is unlimited. He is supreme. And the Jivatma is Anu, infinitesimally small. Always under the power and control of Krishna's various energies. But that little tiny insignificant infinitesimal jivatma, when with humility offers its life in devotion to the pleasure of the Lord, Krishna, the Almighty, the Great, becomes subordinate, becomes conquered by that jivatma. We find within the beautiful pastimes of Krishna how Mother Yashoda, a simple gopi lady, mother, how she was able to bind Krishna by rope. How, when she picked up a stick in order to chastise Krishna, the supreme conqueror of all, even fear personified, fears Krishna. But Krishna was weeping and trembling in fear of his mother and begging her, please do not punish me. I admit that I have done wrong. I confess. Please be merciful to me. This is Krishna, conquered by the love of his devotee. Therefore, for one who offends such a devotee, it is intolerable. There are many stories in this regard. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read of when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having wonderful, wonderful kirtan in the house of Srivas. Each night, all night, and they would lock the doors and lock the windows, because persons who were not endowed with unmotivated devotion, they could not understand. They could not conceive of the ecstatic transformations that were taking place throughout the night during this Sankirtan time. So, there are so many stories of how envious persons became very much angry that they were not allowed in the house. And one person, his name was Gopal Chapa, he decided that he will disgrace the name of Srivas for all time to come. Because in this world, lying propaganda can ruin a person's reputation, and when you ruin a person's reputation, you ruin his life. So what Gopal Chapala did is he arranged in the middle of the night the tantric rites of the paraphernalia for Durga Puja. which is conducted by those people who are very evil, materialistic, and in the mode of ignorance. And he arranged all the paraphernalia in front of Srivatsa's house. And Srivats awoke in the morning, and as a true Vaishnava, he cared nothing for his own prestige. The devotee is so humble, he doesn't care for prestige, he doesn't care for reputation. In fact, the devotee is always very much happy to take the position of the most fallen. He doesn't have to defend himself. If Krishna wants to defend me, let him defend. But as far as I am concerned, let me declare myself to be the most fallen. He doesn't act as the most fallen, but he declares himself as such. So Srivas, he woke in the morning and he saw all this tantric paraphernalia, and he called the townspeople of Navadvipa. And he said, I want to explain to you what I really do all night. I worship Durga. And I worship her in a very materialistic way for materialistic purposes. So please understand, I'm exposed who I really am and what I really do. And he's very sincere. And the people of the town, nobody believed him. They took it all away and they washed the whole area with cow dung to purify it. But Gopal Chapala, he was so condemned by Lord Chaitanya, who was the controller of material nature, he came down with leprosy. Terrible leprosy, so painful. And he was exiled from the town of Navadvipa. He was not allowed to live in any civilization. He had to live completely alone as a beggar on the banks of the Ganges, far from the town. And this suffering, this terrible disease. Limbs were being decayed and worms were eating his body away. And he was suffering and weeping and crying out in agony. And one time, after he suffered for a long time, Lord Chaitanya was walking that way. And Gopal Chapala came and fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet and begged, please, please, forgive me for my offenses and give me your mercy. I surrender to you. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very angry. He said, you want me to be merciful to you? I condemn you to suffer the same way you are now with leprosy for the next 10 million births. That is my mercy to you, because you have offended my devotee. So Gopal Chapala got good realization. And many years later, after Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas, and he came back to Navadvipa, a place called Kulia, then Gopal Chapala returned to him and he said, I am very sorry. I offended your devotee due to my false pride. Please forgive me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I cannot forgive you. Only Srivas can forgive you. So he went to Srivas and begged his forgiveness, and Srivas, out of his great kindness, forgave him. He never considered it an offense in the first place. Srivas just saw the whole experience as the wonderful mercy of the Lord coming for his purification. He never took offense from anyone. That is the nature of the devotee. But such a devotee who is of that consciousness purchases Krishna's heart. So after sincerely atoning before Srivas, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered him. Not only did he cure him of his leprosy, but he gave him bhakti for devotion to the Supreme Personality. So this and so many other stories exhibit how dear a devotee is to the Lord. So why is it that someone would offend a devotee? it can only be due to false pride. Because if one is humble, one offers respect to everyone. What to speak of personalities who have given their life to the service of the Lord. But when we have false pride, we become competitive in an egoistic way. In that competitive spirit, we start thinking we are very great. We cannot tolerate when someone exceeds ourselves in whatever field of greatness we may have progressed in. In this way, it is a very, very dangerous situation when we have this false ego that becomes infatuated within our hearts. Then we become callous. Callous to be sensitive to the needs of others. And we naturally commit offenses. And this is what has just happened to Indra. Indra is the king of heaven. But Krishna wanted to use this story as an example, however great you are, you will lose everything if you become proud. Indra is a devotee. Indra is not a karmi. Indra is a very great devotee. And he has such a high position to serve Krishna. He's the king of the heavens. The demigods turn to him when the demons are too much causing them pain. Indra is in charge of all the rains. And all living beings subsist because of rains. The rains of Deepa are not abundant. That all living beings are existing because of food grains. And food grains are born due to rain. And rain is due to the performance of sacrifice. We read in the Krishna book, the Kankata of Srimad Bhagavatam, how all of the residents of Vrindavan, under the guidance of Sri Nanda Maharaj, were performing Indra Puja. And Krishna asked, what is all this elaborate festivities that is being arranged? And he said, every year it is our tradition, we must worship Indra, because he is the god of the rain. If he is satisfied, he will give rain. If there is rain, there will be prosperity and food for everyone. The fact is, without rain, everything dies. Indra is in charge of the rain. That means everyone on the planet, everyone on every planet, from Swargaloka down, is completely depending on Indra's mercy just to live. That's a high position. And who has given him that position? Krishna. Krishna has given him that position as a service, and Indra has accepted it as a service. But along with the position comes so much facility. Dharmasya Hivavargasya Nartya. Krishna says, it's explained in Gita, never take the facilities that come as a result of your service for your own sense enjoyment. It is all meant to be used in the service of the Lord. So Indra, he has taken this position, and Krishna has given him throne in Swargaloka. Beautiful, the most beautiful throne within the universe. And the Nandana Gardens, the most incredibly beautiful, beautiful gardens where the Parijasa trees and all other auspicious trees are growing. And Indra had such a beautiful, wonderful palace. And not only that, but all the devas. Millions and millions of devatas who were all endowed with the most incredible supernatural powers, the most beautiful bodily features, they all worship and honor Indra as their master. So Indra, with all of his power, all of his prestige, is sitting on his throne. Devatas are worshipping and offering him prayers, and even great rishis and sages are coming to offer their prayers. And the apsaras, the most beautiful, beautiful heavenly damsels, bodily creatures. Prabhupada said, the apsaras, the beauty of their bodies makes any female of this earthly planet look completely shallow and insignificant. When the apsaras perspire, it creates a fragrance sweeter than nectar. And the Gandharvas and the apsaras, they were just dancing and dancing and smiling, all simply and exclusively for the pleasure of Indra. And the Gandharvas, the celestial musicians, they are singing beautiful, beautiful songs and playing wonderful instruments only for the pleasure of Indra. And great, great gods are offering him seva by bringing food to him and fanning him with the chamara and sitting beside him is his beautiful, beautiful, chaste, faithful wife, Sachi. Such a scene. And Indra is sitting completely intoxicated by everything that's being offered to him for his pleasure. The pride, the prestige, the respect, the material opulences and facilities. And in the intoxication of that false pride, what naturally happens? You have to commit offenses to others. Unless you are humble, you will definitely commit offenses. Brihaspati, who was the spiritual master of Indra and the Devatas, entered into the assembly. And Indra did not stand up to welcome him. He did not even acknowledge his presence. He didn't say any blasphemy at all. He simply neglected him. That's all. And Brihaspati, who was a very, very wise man, understood, due to this neglect, the reaction will be that Indra will fall down and lose everything. So Brihaspati, feeling very sad to see his disciple in such a condition of false ego, he just left the place without saying anything to anyone. And then it came to Indra's attention that Brihaspati came and Brihaspati went. And he understood, because Indra's a devotee, I have done a terrible mistake. I have offended a great soul. This is the beauty of the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is steeped so deeply in the principles of etiquette. And in a society where there is not such sensitivity, it's almost impossible to even imagine what is the etiquette and what is the refined nature of such a culture. Srila Prabhupada explained, the Vedic culture is if your worst enemy comes to your house, because he's a guest, you must treat him with such love and care. You must serve him so affectionately that person forgets that you're his enemy until he leaves the house. Then he may remember. How to treat people according to their particular position with respect and honor and affection is our culture, especially superiors. Srila Prabhupada explains that sannyasi represents the renounced order of life. You must bow down before a sannyasi. Even if he's a Mayavadi sannyasi, doesn't matter. Just to offer respects to that principle of renunciation is so important. But the Vedic system is if you forget to offer that obeisances, you must fast for the rest of the day. Otherwise, a great reaction will be upon you. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the most humble person of all. He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibiting the supreme opulence of humility. But he took sannyas. Why? So that people would bow down to him and offer him respect. And by doing so, they would make advancement, whether they understood or not. This was the culture of Vedic civilization. And how a child honors his mother and father. And how the parents honor their children, understanding that they are the property of God, and they must raise them according to the will of God. The affection and the depth of the love of friends. And it's based on basic etiquette. It creates such a charm within the heart toward everyone when we learn these principles of Vaishnava. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that the etiquette of a Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament which makes a devotee beautiful in the eyes of Krishna. So these things are very, very important. Srila Prabhupada was very much concerned. Especially when devotees went to India, he taught very, very systematically and very, very deeply how we must learn to respect various people according to their position. Because after all, the golden rule, the ultimate instruction of all instruction is Trinana Pisunichi. That one must strive to be more humble than the straw in the street, more tolerant than the tree, ready to offer all respects to others and to accept no respect for oneself. But how to offer all respects to others? That is Vaishnava. It is a science, it is a culture to teach us the process. And what the benefits are of pleasing God by offering that respect and kindness to others, and what the reaction is if we neglect that principle. And the bigger you are, the more Krishna watches to make sure you are living up to the standard that is expected of you. So Indra was in a deep position. Therefore, he was expected to show by his example to all others how to respect all living beings, especially superiors like the great Vaishnava, the spiritual master. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining in his purport how even if one is the president or a king, he's not expected to get off of his throne or his high seat. But if a superior person like a Brahmin or Vaishnava comes, he must. Krishna, when he was Dwarkadish, the king of Dwarka, when Narada Muni came, Krishna came off from his throne, put Narada on his bedstead, washed Narada's feet, as did he for Sudama Vipra, a very poor, poverty-stricken, simple Brahmin. Krishna came off of his bed and placed Sudama and washed his feet and had Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, fanning him with chamala. Krishna wanted to show us by example. So Indra, being educated and cultured, understood that he had made a big mistake. And it was all due to false pride. He was under the illusion, I am the doer. He was thinking that all those great sages, rishis, all the apsaras singing for him, all the gandharvas singing for him, all of the devatas offering prayers to him, he was under the illusion that it's for me. He was thinking this throne is mine. This palace is my palace. And all beings who are existing are depending on me for rain. he forgot that everything he had was the gift of God, of Krishna. He was just like the postman. When the postman delivers something, he never says, "This is my gift to you. This is your father's gift to you. I am simply delivering. And anything you give me back, I will deliver back to your father. I cannot keep it for myself." If the postman takes something for himself, he becomes a criminal. Similarly, if we take credit for anything we have done, we become criminals. Krishna is the ability in man. Krishna is the intelligence of the intelligent. Krishna is the strength of the strong. Krishna is the power that activates and animates all of us. And when we become free from ego, we can be a perfect vehicle, a vessel by which Krishna's mercy can just come through us to give the greatest benefit to others. But as soon as we think that I am the doer, then everything stops. And we commit offense. And it is Krishna's mercy. When we become proud, Krishna takes everything away. He must do that. Otherwise, we will never understand the real treasure of devotion within our hearts. We'll never accept the principle of real happiness. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami, "It is humility alone that attracts Krishna. It's not how good you speak. It's not how nice you cook. It's not what results you get in your particular type of service. It's not how handsome or strong you are, or how sweetly you sing, or how wealthy you are, or how big of donations you give. This is not what pleases Krishna. It is a process of purification. We must do the best we possibly can for Krishna. But what attracts Krishna is the humility in which it is offered. Krishna was not impressed by Indra's big, great power because it's all Krishna's power. Whatever we do, Krishna's giving it to us. Why will Krishna be impressed by what we do? He's doing it. But if we just try our very best, if we just surrender and make sacrifice to do our best with humility, for the pleasure of Krishna, giving all credit to the great souls who have empowered us, then that attracts Krishna. So due to the pride of Indra, Krishna became merciful to him. And that is what we are going to read about in the future chapters of the future verses of this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Indra, being very, very intelligent, he knew the philosophy. He understood, now everything's finished. I have committed aparad. I am too proud. And there, in the verses previous, he is condemning himself. What is the use of all this riches? What is the use of all this opulence? What is the use of all this intelligence and power and fame and prestige? It's all simply a disturbance to my life. It's created this pride in my heart which has made me the worst, the lowest, the most offensive. And yes, it is true. Krishna withdrew all his power from Indra. And Indra became helpless, hopeless. Somehow or other, if there's a disease, sometimes you need a surgery to remove that disease. And surgery means blood and pain. So when we allow this disease of false pride to enter into our heart, Krishna gives us so many natural remedies through philosophy, good advice. But if we're somehow or other holding on to that tumor that cancerous tumor of false pride in our heart, and we're not willing to let go. Krishna gives us so many warnings, so many instructions, so many possibilities, but we're not willing to let go. Surgery. Krishna has to take the knife of his causeless mercy and cut it to us. Love. Pain. Convalescence. You can't do anything anymore. You're just laying there. Usually, when he's really working, he does not even use anesthesia. And then we realize we can't do anything. We're just helpless, laying in the bed of our own uselessness. But in that situation, gradually we understand that God is great and I am small. Let me just be an instrument. Let me be a servant. Let me not be the angel. Krishna cuts that pride from our heart. And sometimes he has seen Punamushtakabha. Prabhupada tells the story again to become a mouse. This story, in summary, there was a little mouse, and the mouse was playfully doing his mouse pastime. And then a cat came, and the mouse was pretty much afraid of the cat. So he asked the great Rishi, please, by your mystic powers, make me a cat. The Rishi said, you will not be happy as a cat. Whatever situation you have in this world, you will always be harassed. Changing your situation materially does not solve the problem. Change your heart. You have to take shelter of the Lord. But he wanted to become a cat. So he became a cat. And then the dog started chasing him. And he came to the Rishi and begged, please make me a dog. So he made him a dog. So the dog started chasing cats. But then one day, a tiger came and attacked the dog. Came to the Rishi begging, please, please, make me a tiger. He made him a tiger. Now he has these big nails, big teeth, and powerful body. He's hungry. And he looked at the Rishi. And the Rishi said, oh, you want to eat me? The tiger said, yes, what will you do? He said, what will I do? Punarmushtakabha, again become a mouse. So that is the position of our whole society. God gives us powers and we misuse them. Look at these big, big cities, big, big skyscrapers, new cars, all kinds of technology. And what are we doing with this technology? We're just taking all the credit. I am great, I am big. People are becoming millionaires, people are becoming billionaires, people are becoming big politicians and controllers. People are trying to enjoy so much. Scientists, they're becoming so big and so intelligent and so powerful now, they're claiming there's no need for a God, you have us. Like little Hiranyakashipu. Again, in the form of time, Krishna is taking even the greatest athletes and making them into just shriveled invalids who cannot even walk or talk. In the course of time, even the biggest intelligentsia, they become, their brains become slow, and they become practically without function, and ultimately death comes. And the rich lose all their wealth and the intelligence of all their brain substance. And the athletes lose all their strength and the politicians lose all their power. So before that happens to us, we should surrender to Krishna. So what happened to Indra? The power that Krishna was giving him to be the protector of the universe was taken away. And this big, big, great Indra was conquered by a demon. And when he was conquered, he had to run away and hide. And when he was asked what to do, he was told it's nothing you could do. He made up a lie. So whatever we have, we should understand that it is by the mercy of Krishna. And the real happiness, the real joy of life is to use Krishna. And give the honor and prestige to Krishna. Never take it for yourself. And in this way, if we're always striving to take a humble position, we'll never offend anyone. How can you offend someone when you're humble? You may make a mistake, but Krishna will not take those offenses seriously. You may accidentally touch someone with your foot. Or you may accidentally touch something with your left hand. Those kinds of offenses, Krishna will easily forgive.
Yeah.
is humility. Humility doesn't mean to be inactive. It means to give credit to Krishna. When Arjuna refused to fight and wanted to be non-violent, that was a sign of false ego. Krishna told him to fight and to kill. That was humility. To fight and kill, because it was Krishna's order, understanding him to simply be an instrument of Krishna. That was his humility. To refuse to fight, to refuse to protect Dharma, that was his false ego. We must understand what is humility. Srila Prabhupada would defeat the atheists, he would defeat the scientists. He would defeat the sahajyas. He was bold like a lion. He would call them rascals and fools. That was the essence of humility. Because he was fighting on behalf of Krishna. He was not doing it to make himself great. He was doing it to make Krishna great. He was doing it as a service to his Guru Maharaj. If someone comes to cause harm to a devotee or to a deity, we should fight. That's humility. But if we win, we shouldn't think, look what I have done. I have saved Krishna. I have protected the Vaishnavas. Arjuna did not do like that. We should do the needful to protect what belongs to God. But we should understand that whatever power we have to protect is Krishna's power. Arjuna fought the entire battle of Kurukshetra and destroyed the greatest warriors on earth because it was Krishna's desire. But then later on, after Krishna left the world, when Arjuna was leaving Dwarka and he tried to protect some of Krishna's queens, a band of infidel cowherd people came and attacked Arjuna, and he took his mighty Gandiva bow and he was defeated. And he realized that Krishna gave me the power, and I was able to cross over the ocean with the most powerful acrobats of the crews. And when Krishna took away his power, I could not even cross over a little puddle of insignificant people who were not even kshatriyas. Krishna wanted to show us the power of his. But we must understand, humility means to carry out our service and do the will of God, but take no credit. False ego means to do it and take credit. And false ego, another type of false ego, is to not do it, thinking I know better. If you are sincere, Krishna will help you become a servant. We have to sincerely try to be a humble servant. We have to sincerely pray to be a humble servant. And we should take those wonderful gifts of the Lord that help us. Actually, when the spiritual master asks us to chant 16 rounds every day to follow the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, to read Srimad Bhagavatam, to come to the class, humility means to accept that I need to do these things. If I don't do these things spiritually, I'm finished. If someone says, well, I'm the most fallen, so how can I chant 16 rounds? That is not humility. Humility means, I am the most fallen, so I must chant 16 rounds. I actually believe I'm most fallen, then I'll be grasping on to the instructions of Guru and Gauranga, and I'll follow them. Sometimes our expression of humility is actually a product of false ego. I'm so fallen, how can I reach Srimad Bhagavatam every day? This is false ego. I'm so fallen, I must reach Srimad Bhagavatam. If I don't, I'm finished. I have no independence. I must do it. That is true. And it's true for all. So if we're reading every day, if we're coming to the classes every day, if we're chanting our 16 rounds each day, attentively as possible. If we're sincerely endeavoring to try to be a humble servant and not an enjoyer, then through the means of all of this association with all of Krishna, Krishna is pure sincere. He will give us the proper intelligence. And even if we go a little off track, he will bring us back. He will bring us back. So we have to keep good association, we have to keep that sadhana, and we have to always strive to serve. And even if the false ego comes without our understanding, Krishna will reveal it to him, help us, and he will protect us. Because we are showing him the essence. Does that answer your question? Yes. Two things are required. One is to honestly and sincerely beg forgiveness for that offense. And two is we should very earnestly endeavor to never make that offense again. Then Krishna will take us. If we beg forgiveness, we do it again and again, then that forgiveness is useless. We should learn our lessons. And Krishna will help us. All of us be sincere. This is the quality of sincerity. We're willing to honestly and earnestly accept what is favorable for Krishna consciousness.
I have a question.
Can you speak a little loud?
I was just wondering that Indra felt sorry about his offense and he recognized his offense. And there's a verse in the Bhagavatam which mentions that if we recognize and sincerely feel sorry about our offense, then the reaction gets burned up by the fire of repentance. So why is that Indra still had to fall down from his position?
Because he recognized it. Eventually, he brought back to his position of his service as the King of Heaven. If he didn't sincerely repent, that would have never been given back to him. However, the offense was made. The pride was within his heart, which caused the offense. So it was required that he had to go through a terrible, terrible reaction. But because of his basic sincerity, he was brought back to this position of giving his service. Even if we very honestly understand that we have done wrong. Still, Krishna does the needful to purify our heart. Indra makes these offenses many times. There are so many stories of Indra. But actually, Indra is a very great soul. He's much greater than us. But Krishna uses him in such a way to perform such stupid offenses as to teach the world. After all, Indra tried to kill all the inhabitants of Vrindavan due to his false ego. He was so proud that they're offering me the puja every year in Vrindavan, and now they're not doing it. This was intolerable for him to not be respected and worshipped, so he sent the Sanvataka clouds to destroy Vrindavan. And Krishna lifted the Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand for 7 days and seven nights. And through all these powerful rains, the rain was falling not in drops, but in pillars. And lightning was just crashing down, and thunder was resounding everywhere. These are the clouds that caused the pralaya. These are the clouds that at the time of devastation, within a matter of minutes, just make the whole world become a huge ocean. And they were all aimed at Braj Bhumi, a little village. Krishna just effortlessly lifted Govardhan, and everyone was standing under the Govardhan. And for 7 days and seven nights, nobody ate anything and nobody slept. Because they were just so infatuated with love, seeing this beautiful seven-year-old form of Krishna holding Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand smiling upon everyone, that they were completely nourished and satisfied just seeing Krishna as Giridhari. But they forgot about eating, drinking, and sleeping. They didn't even wink their eyes because they were so much in capture by Krishna's beauty. And then Indra came down perform Abhishek of Krishna. It's not just anyone who could come down and personally give Krishna Abhishek. He's a very exalted personality. But at the same time, he's very wealthy, very powerful, and he gets tremendous prestige. So Krishna likes to use him as a good example to the rest of us. Not to be proud of our wealth, our prestige, or our power. For our intelligence. Because compared to Indra, we are like little insects. And yet we're proud. That's crazy. So Indra was a good person, but Krishna causes him to make many mistakes to teach us. So if you make an offense, you will be delivered because you sincerely are repentant. But still, part of the process of your purification means you may have to go through some reaction. And if you're actually humble, you'll accept that reaction with a grateful heart. I deserve so much mercy. Krishna is only giving me this much just for my purification. So I will not do it again. Does that answer your question? There you go. Any other questions?
Thank you.
But if you do not believe that Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, that is the second question. There are different stages of faith. This means that at the beginning we have some faith by the grace of the Lord. When the Lord within our heart, Paramatma sees we're basically sincere, he gives us a little faith. And that faith brings us to the association of devotees. In the association of devotees, we are taught the process of Krishna consciousness. And we take guidance from the proper spiritual master in Bhajan Kriya, that following the principle very carefully. And gradually, that little bit of faith is nourished. To the degree the anarthas, the unwanted things within our heart, the contaminations come out, to that degree our faith becomes stronger. And when our heart becomes very pure, purified from envy and lust and pride and greed, and anger and illusion, then Nishtha, then there is firm faith. Then we no longer believe what we know. Until then, we believe. We believe because it's coming from Guru's Adhana Shastra. We believe that Krishna is all powerful. We believe there's an almighty God, and he reveals himself through his pastimes, he reveals himself through the scripture, he reveals himself through the words of the great sages. We believe these things because they're true. And we see the lives of great personalities. This faith transforms them. You see someone like Srila Prabhupada, what type of compassion, what type of faith, what type of inner strength, of devotion. And this gives us a real sense of faith. Yes, this must be true. The scriptures say it, the great sages say it, Parampara says it, it must be true. So we believe. And that belief gives us enough conviction to follow the process. But it's the process that purifies the heart. And to the degree the heart is pure, you no longer just believe, but you know. You have conviction. You have experience. So that comes in a very purified state, where you actually have the revelation, the realization, and the experience by which you know it. Back in 1972, he brought the leaders of the movement together in Los Angeles, and he asked each one of them, are you convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God? When Prabhupada asks you that, you have to really search your soul. And they were basically silent. If the number of devotees who are in this movement now were just convinced of this teaching, we could take over the entire world and make it Krishna conscious in 18 days. That conviction is a very, very precious gift of God. And it is something that comes.
Thank you.